Welcome, everybody. So we're starting up again. We're still working our way through An Open-Hearted Life, Transformative Methods for Compassionate Living from a Clinical Psychologist and a Buddhist Nun. And so Russell Coates and I worked on this book together, and both of us really enjoyed it, both seeing the similarities in our approach to generating compassion, and also the differences in how we approach. He approaches things much more from a scientific viewpoint, and me much more from a spiritual viewpoint. But there's the book itself is written for secular readers, or it's not a Buddhist book per se. So we've been going through the initial little vignettes, because the way we organized the book was that he wrote on some topics, I wrote on the other topics, and then we put them together. And so we've already done 37. We're on the 38th, but you can tune in midway. You know, I think this particular, you know, whatever comes now, doesn't matter if you've had the previous things, you can benefit from it. And you can also get the book and read what happened before, or watch the previous talks on it. Okay, so I always like to start with a moment or two of silence. We can just, again, settle our mind before we have a talk. So come back to your breath for a minute. And then let's generate our motivation for sharing the teachings on compassion by generating some compassion now, really thinking that all other living beings are in the same predicament we are in. Their wish for happiness and not to have suffering is just as intense as ours. And they have the same right for happiness. They deserve happiness in the same way. And so we have to really banish our judgmental mind that sees some living beings as more worthy and others as less worthy. And come back to the ways in which we are all the same. Specifically, you know, that if you look in anybody's heart, their deepest wish is simply to live peacefully and with happiness and not experience either physical or mental suffering. So if we come back to that common quality, that helps us to alleviate the judgment that we often have, either for other beings or against others. And then on that basis, and seeing that we are equal with them too, then we have love wishing them to have happiness, compassion wishing all of us to be free of suffering. And in our lives, we do whatever we can to bring that about. Thank you. Okay, so this chapter 38, is entitled Reaching Out with Compassion. So this chapter is about one of the ways we go south when we can't control our judgmental mind, when we care more for ourselves than others, when we grasp at our own happiness so intensely that we get ourselves tangled up in knots about it. You know that state? So this chapter is about one of the things we do when our mind goes in that direction. And also it speaks of some alternatives of how we can not only think, but what we can do to change that. Okay. So the chapter reads, when we are miserable, you got that? Everybody miserable? Good. I'm glad you're collaborating. When we are miserable, what we often want most is to feel connected to others. True or not true? True, isn't it? Yeah, we're miserable because we feel we don't belong, or we can't communicate well, or others don't understand us, or we don't understand them, or we don't have the same purposes. You know, so much of our suffering is along that line. And so we really want to feel connected to others. Even if we're physically sick, you know, we want to feel connected to others, because somehow we feel better when we know that other people are around and care for us. Yet our actions frequently have the opposite effect. So instead of helping to make us connect with others, even though that's what we want, we act in ways that produce the opposite result. Sometimes we pick a fight with someone close to us just to feel connected to that person in some way. Have you ever done that? Yeah. We somebody is like, you know, they're involved in their own stuff. We want some attention. We want some connection. So we pick a fight, you know, and then the person has to pay attention to us. And then hopefully, you know, we go through the painful argument and we make up at the end, and then we feel real connected to them. Of course, how long it takes to go through the painful argument and resolve it, you know, is it really worth all that time of misery to come into making up again? But we don't think about that when we pick the fight. Okay, other times we throw ourselves a pity party, replete with lead balloons and a soundtrack playing, poor me, poor me, poor me, poor me, set on a loop so that it becomes the background music that permeates all other thoughts, if not the major sound in our head. You ever had that? Yeah. We say to ourselves, if only someone would notice how miserable and lonely I am and show me a little compassion. And then we complain that we live in such a cold, cruel world with so many insensitive people. They don't see how unhappy I am, how suffering I am, the difficult predicament I'm in, and how I don't know how to solve my problem. Yet, when a friend comes up and gently says, what's wrong? You look unhappy. We turn away from them with a sniff and say, nothing. Nothing's wrong. I'm fine. Having been pushed away, our friend leaves and we mourn to ourselves. I knew it all along. No one cares about me. We set ourselves up, don't we? Or it may be our pity party is tinged with anger, and we slam a few doors so that the insensitive people around us will notice that we're unhappy. Wham! Bang! Stomp! Bad expression on the face. Complain, criticize. Maybe then they'll understand I'm happy. I'm unhappy. But then when they come and kindly ask, what's wrong? Are you angry? We shout, I'm not angry. Why are you always accusing me of being angry? Why are you always accusing me of having a problem? It's your problem anyway. Just leave me alone. Mind your own business. Put off by our outburst, they do as we've instructed. Then, when we return to our pity party, we return to our pity party saying, it's always the same. They just don't understand me. Do you see how our very actions and behavior bring the opposite result? Yeah. If we went to somebody and said, you know, I'm having some difficulty now. Can I talk to you? I want to share it. And will you help me process this to pull me out of my mood? Then somebody would surely step up and help us. We could process it. We would be connected, you know, and then we could go on. But overwhelmed by our own ignorance, we don't think of that. What we most want in these situations is to be connected to others. But in our misery, we often create the conditions that disconnect us from those we care about most. How can we break this vicious cycle? And here's a quote attributed to Mother Teresa. We don't know if she really said it, but people say she does. And it doesn't really matter who said it because it's a good quote. Okay, so it goes, when I am hungry, give me lots of food. No, it doesn't say that. It says, when I'm hungry, give me somebody who needs food. When I am thirsty, send me someone needing a drink. In other words, when I'm miserable, send me somebody who's in the same predicament. You know, it doesn't have to be exactly the same situation, but somebody that I can reach out to and care for and help. Because when I open my heart and reach out to others and help, that's how I will feel connected. My previous status, strategy of sulking, slamming doors, pouting, doesn't help me be connected to others. It pushes others away. So that's why these verses are always about, you know, who can I reach out to? Because the thing is, when we care about others, we stop feeling sorry for ourselves. When we stop feeling sorry for ourselves, we aren't so miserable. Because feeling sorry for ourselves makes us more miserable than we already are because of whatever problem we have. Okay. I just remember His Holiness talking about this so much. I remember him one time saying that when we suffer from low self-esteem, yeah, reach out with compassion and connect with other people, offer your help to other people. And they found that with juveniles in detention, if they send them out to work, like in old age homes or nursing homes, rehab centers, these kids who are usually on the streets not knowing what to do with themselves, they're wheeling people in wheelchairs, they're taking old ladies out for a walk or out for a wheel, you know, they're talking to other people. And all of a sudden, these kids who come from backgrounds that are really awful, they feel that like they have some purpose and meaning in their life, and because they're connecting with these other people who really need their help. Yeah. When I am cold, send me someone to warm. When I am grieving, send me someone to console. Yeah. When we grieve, sometimes we get so much into ourselves. You know, I'm the only one who has ever had this kind of pain of loss. Actually, it's a universal experience. And when we can reach out, you know, with an open heart and connect to others who are also grieving, then, you know, the connection, the human connection, is very important. I think this is also why we have pets. Yeah? Because pets, not only do they not talk back, they may bark back or meow back, but usually they're purring or wagging their tails. Yeah? And they give us unconditional love. Yeah. And it enables us to connect with some living beings. Yeah. And a pet functions different than a teddy bear does. When you're little, you have a teddy bear. But that doesn't work when you're older. But when you have a pet, your pet understands you. Yeah. And they need your help and kindness. And they accept it readily. Yeah. So it's you know, it's something important. And so many people volunteer at animal shelters because, you know, these poor abandoned dogs and cats need some love and they just lap it up. Yeah. When I am poor, lend me someone in need. When I have no time, give me someone I can help a little while. Yeah, when we have no time, when we're stressed out, it's like, leave me alone. I can't, you know what I say all the time. You know, I want to write this book. I have no time. I have to do so many emails. You know, whereas if we stop that mind and just say, you know, somebody is reaching out for help, it doesn't take that long to help. Yeah. And then when we help, we feel good about ourselves. And the other person certainly appreciates it. When I am humiliated, let me have someone to praise. Ooh, that one's tough, isn't it? When we feel humiliated, oh, the last thing we want to do is praise somebody else. Yeah, because the world is so mean to us and we need some support and some praise and some acknowledgement of everything we're doing and some appreciation. And we go round and around that we're not getting it. The world owes it to us. And oh, isn't this terrible? Nobody else has ever felt this way. Whereas if we cut it and look around and see who else needs some encouragement. Yeah. And encouraging others, you know, if you make that a practice, you know, assign yourself a Dharma practice of encouraging people, yeah, or just showing appreciation for what others do, it's such a good way to pull us out of our feelings of humiliation or inferiority or inability to connect or whatever. Yeah. When I am disheartened, send me someone to cheer. When I need understanding, give me someone who needs mine. Yeah, so open our eyes around to the people around us who needs understanding right now. Not, they don't need us to fix their problems. They need us just to understand. Yeah. Open the eyes to see that. When I need to be looked after, give me someone to care for. So when I need other people to help me, who can I help? Yeah. When I think only of myself, draw my thoughts to another. Because thinking only about ourselves, we are so miserable, aren't we? Yeah. When we think about our own problems, we see no way to fix them, no way to handle them. Every alternative, every option we think of is doomed to failure in our own mind. And our mind gets narrower and narrower and narrower, so that even if other people give suggestions to us about what to do, our first response is that won't work. So it's so crazy. I mean, this is a function of the self-centered mind. It makes us really, truly miserable. Yeah. So that's one reason why we meditate on the disadvantages of the self-centeredness. There's many more reasons, but, you know, from our own experience, we can really see that when we get stuck in that way, it's like everything seems hopeless. You know, there's nothing we can do. Nothing. Yeah? Of course, doing any of these actions is the last thing we want to do when we're stuck in our pity party. We'd much prefer to sit there and feel sorry for ourselves and suck our thumb and blame other people for being so insensitive and not caring about us. Okay. But sometimes what we want to do the least is what will help us the most. I think I've told you many times about how my parents often made me do things I didn't want to do, you know, saying I would enjoy it. I don't go. And then I'd go and I had a good time. Yeah. So sometimes what we want to do the least is what will help us the most. Opening our hearts to empathize with and care about others frees us from the pain of self-centeredness. We see that we are not alone in having difficulties, that many others are undergoing problems far more serious than ours. I've been reading Obama's book, A Promised Land. Oh my goodness. That job of being president is stressful, you know, and he really cares about people and things. And I don't know if I could bear the stress of that. Yeah. But, you know, just reading about what he's dealing with, you see, wow, you know, what I'm going through is nothing compared to what he went through. You know, and it's also nothing compared to what the people he's trying to help are going through. Yeah. You know, like trying to navigate the Arab Spring and come up with actions that help people, you know, when there's, you know, so very difficult to come up with things that will work because of so many things that have been set in place for, you know, years, if not centuries beforehand. Okay. So compared to, you know, the suffering of a whole country or of a society, you know, my suffering is like nothing. Yeah. We stop being self-absorbed and feel connected to others through the fact of our common humanity and the universal wish to be safe, happy, and free from fear and suffering. Sometimes when I go to bed, you know, my dedication, I also think of, you know, people in war-torn areas and areas of drought and poverty and destruction and so on, and think of, you know, like living in a refugee tent for generations, not just for a few years, but some families have been in refugees' tents for generations. And I think of people sleeping out in the cold and so on, and really wish them to feel safe and to have a sense of safety and security. And from that, I always realize the ultimate sense of safety and security is nirvana. It's full awakening. But I can still wish them safety and security in this life. And when I do that, when I spend some time wishing them that, a certain feeling comes over me where I feel safety and security just by wishing that for others. Yeah. Extending ourselves to another living being, a pet, a child, a friend, a stranger, even someone we don't care for or someone who has different opinions than we do, opens the door to inner happiness. Leave food out for the squirrels. You know, how many people do you see that love having bird feeders and watching the birds eat? It, you know, it's a whole process of connecting to and feeling like I'm helping these living creatures. And, you know, we give the deer some dessert without spoiling them because we know that they have to, you know, rely on their own instincts to get food. But it feels good. Yeah. So leave food out for the squirrels, put up a bird feeder, volunteer at the library. Yeah. Help little kids who are just learning to read find their way to find a book that they will enjoy. Let me take a moment here for an unpaid public announcement of the Abbey is going to publish its first children's book. It's written, it's called Gavin Finds the Secret to Happiness. Gavin Discovers the Secret to Happiness. It's about a dog. Yeah. And it's written by one of the inmates that I've corresponded with for many years. A beautiful story. And our friend Tracy Cadro is doing the layout. Miguel, who you know, is doing the illustrations. So, volunteer at a library and help little kids find Gavin Discovers the Secret to Happiness. It's an adorable story, and it really shows the whole theme of the story is this thing of opening yourself to somebody else's situation instead of being jealous of others because they have more and better than what you do. Okay. When it's published, I'll read it on a BBC. You can all sit around. Yeah. Okay. So smile at someone. We think smiling doesn't count. One of my friends told me when she was younger, one day she was really depressed, even getting suicidal. walking down the street, and a total stranger smiled at her as he walked by. And she said that just stopped her in her tracks and made her feel, oh, there's hope. Yeah, a simple smile. Bestow a favor that wasn't asked for. You're in the market and somebody's kid is shrieking. Yeah, go over, distract the kid. You know, help the mom or maybe the dad who needs help at that time. Sometimes the kids are so shocked when a stranger comes over that they shut up automatically. Have you seen that? Yeah. Okay, bestow a favor that wasn't asked for. Praise someone for work well done. Yeah, one time I gave a class I was teaching, I gave them the assignment that week to praise one of their colleagues that they didn't particularly like. And one guy in the group had been constantly complaining about one colleague. And so I told him, this colleague especially, you find something nice to say about him. One time every day, you find something nice to say to him. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And he said, there's nothing nice I can say. I said, try. So he came back the next week and he said, I tried. And the first time I kind of lied. But the guy responded and he smiled after that. And then I the next day I said something nice to him too. And so gradually each day he said it was easier to say something nice to this person. And it was like, wow, this total turnaround in his mind that he could actually do that. Yeah. So praise someone for work well done, which is really important when you raise kids. Instead of saying you're a good boy, you're a good girl, which gives kids no solid, indicator of what made you happy or what made you upset. You know, say, I really appreciate when you clean up your room because now I can walk down the corridor, without tripping. Thank you so much. Yeah. Or when you throw, rocks at the neighbors. When I was little, our neighbors threw rocks at us, over the fence. They would love rocks. you find something, nice to say about that person or some way to connect with them. Yeah. Some way to point out something that they do well. Okay. Point out someone's good qualities when they need a boost. So all these practices, the basic thing underlying them is it makes us look at other people's experiences. And that in and of itself pulls us out of this tremendous weight of whatever we're stressed out and worried or fearful about. It's just the process of, oh, there's not just me. There's look what's going on. Yeah. Okay. In other words, do something that pulls you outside of yourself, that helps you see that there are billions of living beings who, like you, want to connect to others with compassion. All of us feel better when we experience kindness, empathy, and good wishes for others. Yeah, so when you go into a situation where you don't know anybody, think that there's probably other people there too who don't know anybody. And go talk to them. Yeah. So, just whatever we're feeling, look around us what other people are going through. It may be helpful to give yourself a homework assignment. Every day I'm going to make at least one small effort to connect with someone with compassion. I'm going to do one tiny action without expecting anything back from anyone, while quietly and by myself taking delight in giving. So that the action of reaching out to somebody is the reward for doing the action, no matter how the other person responds. Okay. Then, even if you don't feel like doing it, do it anyway. Yeah. This is the thing is sometimes I don't want to feel like doing it. You know, I just want to stay in my room. You know, make yourself do something. Yeah. You know, I can't make myself do anything. We only say that in situations where we're not getting paid money. When we're at work and we don't feel like doing something and our boss wants something done, we do it even we don't feel like doing it, don't we? You get up in the morning, you don't feel like going to work, you get up and go to work. Yeah? Because you're getting paid to do that. At home, yeah, or here, someone needs your help early in the morning, you don't feel like getting up, you don't get up. Even you get up, they need help. I don't feel like it. I have something else to do. Yeah? But when there's money, we get up and we will make ourselves do something we don't feel like doing. Isn't that amazing? Yeah? I was going to say, just to get a few pieces of paper, but we don't even get pieces of paper. We just get squiggles in our bank account. Yeah. It's true, isn't it? Okay, so here's a reflection to do. Get creative. Okay. Come up with some ways to bring compassion, kindness, and generosity into your daily life. Create a list of compassionate actions you could do. Just, you know, if you have a hard time, start with small things. I could make my bed. That will give my roommate pleasure. How long does it take to make your bed? 30 seconds? Maybe 60 seconds on a slow day. But it helps other people. And it helps your own mind. So just start, you know, even with small things. Yeah. Then each day, pick one in your list of things you could do and do it. As you do so, bring to mind the wish to become deeply compassionate and see this action as a way to move towards this goal. So you have your own personal goal, the way you want to grow. And then you see, you know, doing this action as something that is taking you in the direction you want to go in. So it's not only helping somebody else, but it's helping you fulfill your own aspirations. As you complete your homework of helping someone, take note of how it feels to behave in this kind, compassionate way. Notice the emotions that arise in you as you purposefully take actions to benefit others. Again, just start small, you know, and then gradually increase, you know, 30 seconds to make your bed. Yeah. Then you do that from then on. It's not that you do that for a week and then stop to take up another one that takes 2 minutes, you know, so I need more time, so I stop making my bed so I have the extra 30 seconds to do the other thing that takes 2 minutes. You know, but then slowly add on to it of just simple ways of being a pleasant person and being cooperative and helping people out. Okay, so that's chapter 38. There's some time for questions and comments if people have. Yeah.
I just wanted to say that there's two ways when I get into my pity party, or I just wake up in an angry mood, or I'm just grouchy. I get grouchy as the day goes on. There's still two ways. This way, where you get away from yourself, out of yourself, and help others and extend yourself. But then I have that other habit, which is if I'm in this foul mood, there's got to be somebody out there who's the cause of it. So I kind of have to learn which Dharma strategy works, because that my sometimes has a similar flavor. Mm. And to know that this is your karma, this is a habit of mind, this is nobody's fault but your own, or to say, go, you know, give somebody a smile, go help somebody, get out of yourself. So sometimes I have to figure out the discernment between that. Is there a...
You mean between actively going and doing something
to get myself out of that afflicted
state, mood, or sitting there and changing your thoughts in order to get you out of that mood.
Right. Because yes, it's afflicted. It's a habit. I woke up with it, whatever.
Yeah. I don't know. You got to develop a sensitivity within yourself to see which one works better in different kinds of situations. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, it can be if you're in a really foul mood, doing something is better. But other times when we're in a bad mood, really sitting and thinking, you know, I created the cause for this. Why am I blaming other people? Yeah. And this is helping to purify my negative karma. So let's give it some credit for that. So I don't know. You just have to try out different things and develop a sensitivity in your own mind to what will work at what times.
One of the things, even after the retreat this winter, is just to see the level of certain mental states that have absolutely no basis in reality. They're just a habit. Yeah. And there's a little object out there that might trigger it, but yeah, they're just habits with totally non-existence.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Somebody doesn't smile at us. Somebody doesn't say please. Somebody doesn't treat us the way we think we should be treated according to our status. You know, someone asks us a question and we instantly get defensive because we think they're challenging our capability. And they aren't, you know, they're just asking a question. But like, why are you asking me that question? I'm not responsible for that. I already have so much on my plate. You go do it. Yeah, we have a lot of habits that don't pay. And I think this is part of our our meditation practice, is noticing what these habits are. Yeah, watching them, because they will come, they're habits, so they will come up repeatedly, not only in our daily life, but in our meditation. And we just find ourselves thinking in the same habitual way, you know, one moment after the other, one situation after the other. And we're so used to it that we don't even notice it as a habit. We think that's just the way I am. That's just the way any reasonable person would respond to this situation. Yeah. And so, you know, when we can't notice our dysfunctional habits, you know, emotional habits like this, then it's very hard to do anything about it. Yeah. So this is why sometimes talking with somebody else can really be helpful, because they will help us, you know, identify what some of these habits are. You know, if we're so used to them that we can't see them, another person can help us identify what they are. You know, that's why sometimes people go to a coach or a therapist or a spiritual leader, you know, somebody to talk to, because they can help us. You know, I've noticed that my mind may not be particularly complaining, But as soon as there's another person there who will listen, I will complain. You know? And it's not like I've been complaining all the time, looking for somebody to complain to. I've been okay. But as soon as there's, you know, my victim who I can dump on, you know, they have to listen to my complaints. You know, then I do. And it's a ridiculous habit, self-centered habit. Yeah. So then sometimes you have to catch yourself in the middle of it. I wrote a friend a very difficult Dharma question recently. And he wrote back and it was like, you know, well, I've forgotten everything I've learned. And, you know, it's difficult, as you can see, you know, when you ask me things and I don't remember. And then he said, but I don't really need to complain to you about this. So it's like, oh, I understand how you feel. Yeah. But, you know, the way he, you know, he's caught himself in the middle of it and said that. So, yeah. So sometimes we have to do that with ourselves.
So we can be helpful to others because we want to extend kindness and compassion. But we can also do that because we want to look like we're helpful and we want other people to like us.
Yeah.
So how do we work with these two? Because outwardly, the action can be the same. And any advice on that?
Okay, yes. So the people pleaser conundrum. Yeah. So we have the person who sincerely wants to be friendly and help, and the person who helps so that other people will like them. Okay, to put on a good show. Anybody here a people pleaser? Yeah. I think especially women, we've been brought up to be people pleasers. Yeah, that's your role. You're a good girl. You make everybody happy. If somebody's unhappy, you better do something about it. Yeah, because somehow it's your fault. Ridiculous way of thinking. One of these ridiculous mental habits, isn't it? So how do you tell the difference? You look at what's going on inside of you. You know, what is your motivation, really? Is it like a feeling of insecurity and I've got to work the situation so that I earn some brownie points and people like me? You know, there's a certain feeling in your mind and a certain thought process when that's going on. Or is it, you know, oh, I really want to help this person. And so sometimes you find it's the first one, it's the people pleasing, and then you have to stop and generate a good motivation. It doesn't mean that you don't go and help. It means you stop and you change your motivation.
I like this prayer very much so, and find truth in it, like giving something when you miss something. Mm-hmm. And I just recently read a beautiful story by a woman. She works at the Province Hospital, Heart Hospital in Spokane. And she has experienced some trauma in her early life with the family coming from Vietnam too. And she decided to help others who also go through challenging times when somebody dies, for example. Mm-hmm. And she became something like a religious chaplain. And through her compassion, she could transform her own experiences.
Yeah.
So these examples are beautiful. And I wanted to share that those who want to volunteer online and read for kids, because they have a passion for that, maybe. It's also online possible right now. I checked it in Newport, actually, over the hospital. They offer this, so you can apply for that.
Yeah.
You can read that book, the children's book.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really a very proven strategy, too. And so many people do that when they've had incredible suffering or trauma. Then they dedicate their lives to help other people who've been through a similar experience. Because they understand that experience and they can really empathize and they know what they've had to do to heal from it and they can give those suggestions to other people too. So then let's just have a short meditation to, you know, think of one of your mental habits, the self-centered ones, and you know, what kind of situations does it arise in, and how can you catch it, and what can you do to open your heart at that moment and really connect with others? So use specific examples. So let's dedicate.